Welcome to SCI Science Perspectives, a podcast brought to you by the American Spinal Injury Association. In this podcast, we'll be discussing emerging literature spanning the full spectrum of SCI research from discovery to clinical application. You're listening to a scholarly perspectives episode with Dr. Tirsin de Paliva and Mr. Gotti. I am your host, Faria.
And I'm David. Today, we are discussing the paper titled Gait Recovery in Patients with Late Assessment of Incomplete Spinal Cord Injury, a retrospective study in Argentina, which was published in the journal Spinal Cord Medicine. The paper was suggested to us by Asia's Americas Committee, which we'll hear more about later. Our guests today are twofold, Dr. Tirsin de Paliva and Mr. Gatti. Mr. Marcelo Gatti is a physiatry physical therapist who graduated from the University of Buenos Aires in 1998. Currently, his clinical and academic appointments include instructor of neurologic kinesiology and researcher at the University of Buenos Aires as director of neurorehabilitation in the area of spinal cord injury at Fleni Institute Escobar, Buenos Aires, Argentina, which we'll hear all about. Mr. Gatti has this position for the last 23 years. And Dr. Daniela Tirsin de Paliva is a professor of physiology at the University of Louisville School of Medicine. She completed her PhD in physiology and biophysics from U of L in 2011 under the mentorship of Dr. Suzanne Harkema. Her research interests include the evaluation of non-pharmaceutical, non-invasive therapeutics to diminish secondary complications among people with spinal cord injury, including pulmonary function, respiratory muscle activation, body composition, cardiovascular fitness, and autonomic dysfunction in people with chronic cervical or thoracic SCI. Dr. Tirsin de Paliva is currently investigating the effectiveness of biofeedback with immersive visual reality and breathing techniques on blood pressure modulation and decreasing episodes of orthostatic hypotension, which is debilitating and very common in this population. Dr. Tirsin de Paliva has vast experience teaching physiology at the undergraduate level and to professionals and school-age students through her community outreach projects. A complementary line of inquiry is understanding effective pedagogical approaches for teaching physiology. Her research has provided her with a foundation for teaching and service efforts to promote and implement evidence-based active learning in the classroom and community. So to Dr. Paliva and Tirsin de Paliva and to Mr. Gatti, welcome to the podcast.
Thank you.
Thank you very much.
So to get us started here, before we recorded, you were telling us a little bit about the cool origin story of this paper. So what we end up reading is this very polished intro methods results discussion, but we don't always hear about why the study was undertaken. So can you say a little bit about the history of why this project came to be?
Yes. During the pandemic, the America Committee and the Latin America Subcommittee has had a lot of work. Kind of in a way, the pandemic allowed us to create this network that is international of more than 19 countries, all under the umbrella of the America Committee. And what we did is one goal, it was like mostly training for physicians to create a sense of community, what is going on in each of these countries, but also we collected data and see what is needed in Latin America from the clinicians. What do they need? What else can we do to support? And one of the things was like more research, more clinical research. So in 2022, we created the first workshop in which the response was so overwhelming. We were aiming for 10 people and we end up with 302 respondents. we could only expand so much. So we did one workshop of like 15 people. By merit, they had to, like, you know, it was very competitive. And then we did a second one in 2023, 2024. So it was one 2022, 2023, and then the other one 2023, 2024. Mr. Gatti was one of the participants. He already has been collecting data and he has been working and he's very passionate about research. So basically they invite me to collaborate and see how we could work together. And to me, it has been an honor, tremendous honor. It's my first paper as an investigator with a group from Argentina. I am from Argentina, but I have been in the US for 25 years, and this is my first time, so this paper is in my heart, very special to me.
That's awesome to hear, and it's really fascinating just to hear how you came to be and how this is such a big achievement for you, and also just so interesting for all of our listeners to get a scope on what rehab looks like in Argentina, since for our viewers and our listeners, that's an area that we don't know that much about. So I wanted to ask Mr. Gatti, what does rehabilitation care look like in Argentina in terms of, after surgery? Like, what happens to these patients with spinal cord injury? What are the facilities like? What, if you could just give us some information about what things look like over there.
We base the rotation treatment in three pillars in Argentina. General straightening of the extremity and fundamentally reinforcing core stability exercise on the stretcher. Secondly, vertically, starting with a standing bed until the patient is able to stand upright with a walker. And thirdly, to initiate the walking as early as possible with a level of assistance necessary to achieve it. That is to say, to provide the necessary support from therapies, walking aids, and orthotics device to achieve it. This, according to the criteria and the condition of each patient, we do it on the training with body weight support or walking over overground.
Fantastic. And I'll just ask our clinical host here, Dr. Kalik, does this sound familiar?
Oh, definitely. For sure. Yep. This is very, very similar to how we would operate here. And it's just so interesting just to see how in areas where you would have no forte or no kind of opening, it's similar things of what we would do here in the US compared to other countries. So really, really fascinating to hear.
So, Mr. Gaddy, the next question for you. The study duration was from the year 2004 to the year 2022. That is many years. And in that time, there were technological developments, new devices become available, et cetera, et cetera. But the method section of the paper doesn't expand on the, obviously, you have limited space, really in-depth how the rehabilitation was composed. So can you comment on how the standard of care had changed during the study duration's time?
In relation to Argentina look like, how many facilities? I say in relation this, the health system in Argentina is decentralized. People can access rehabilitation within medical coverage to a state center or with a social security or private medicine to the private institutions. There are many facilities, but with no more than 50 beds in each facility on average. In very few places, one-to-one care is provided, one therapist, one patient, and in almost all other service facilitators work with four patients for every one therapist. So the rehabilitation results are very poor. In relation to David's question, in relation to the long stays, David?
I'm going to briefly talk to Marcelo en Spanish a little bit.
Please do.
Querían como una idea en general de cómo es en general en la Argentina la rehabilitación y si te parece les puedo decir que puede ser distinto en cada provincia dependiendo de la obra social, etcétera. ¿Está bien?
Exacto.
Okay, I wanted to check first because I haven't been for a long time, but in Argentina and many other places, it depends on where you live, your resources, For example, Fleming is in Buenos Aires, so it's like Argentina is a big country, but considering the big space, it's not that populated. It's only 45 million people, and the majority are going to be centralized in Buenos Aires area. And there, the rehabilitation services are going to be much stronger than in the countryside. I'm from like Mendoza, which is all the way to the west. And it's kind of okay, but you always need to travel, and it's very difficult for patients. And some patients don't have any specialized spinal cord injury rehabilitation whatsoever. So sometimes the physicians and the therapist have to wear multiple hats trying to figure out how to provide the support that the patient needs. This particular center where Marce is the director of rehabilitation is very unique, and it's very high end for the Argentinian standard. So not it's not like everybody has access to go there. But in general, it's depending where you are from, that is not very standardized, and how much resources you have, and your health insurance and out-of-pocket money is a big deal. So if you can pay, you get better access, unfortunately. Even though it's supposed to be like universal healthcare, but it's, in reality, it can be very tough.
Unfortunately, our American listenership will be able to relate to that. So this helps answer one of our coming questions that you anticipated about the generalizability of this Flenny rehab model that looks so professional in this paper. And so maybe other centers in Argentina, you would not expect the same, but maybe Dr. Tersen de Palavie, if you'll allow me to throw you this question, you can call in Mr. Gaddy. Still within Flenny, between the years of 2004 and 2022, were there changes in technology that might have influenced the outcomes? Because there was no time series analysis of whether or not these responders were responding more in more recent years, because maybe they got access to technology.
Sadly, we haven't incorporated anything different in the treatment protocol that is really significant to improve rehabilitation. We are based in three pillars mentioned anteriorly. I don't think this was the case since we have been using the same treatment modality for all the patients included in the study for many years. This has a negative side, which could be no innovation in treatment. And the positive side, that is that despite the years and the from the cost pressure from the cost of the healthcare system, we were able to maintain the same quality for attention for more than 20 years.
Yes, this is an important methodological note for the science side, which is great.
Locomotor training begins as early as possible with the level of assistance necessary to achieve it. That is to say, to provide the necessary support of therapies, sometimes up to three therapies for the patient to walk. The necessary support of walking aid, it can be a walker or anterior walker or walker with front wheels or device with ankle foot orthosis or knee ankle foot orthosis. According to the criteria and conditions of each patient, we use body weight support treatment or walking over ground, on overground. We don't use exoskeleton. We don't exoskeleton. And we don't use electric stimulation in the treatment. Based in scientific evidence, scientific, this therapy is not more effective than progress resistance program. We use it to use it but haven't been using it for a couple of years.
Interesting. Yeah, that's a little different than what we would do here clinically. So here we'll have the local motor training with the body weight support treadmill or overground walking. But then we also will incorporate electrical stimulation, and not just for ambulation, but we'll also do it for upper extremity functioning. And then same thing with the exoskeleton. It's not in every facility. It really depends on, you know, where you're going to be at throughout the United States. And again, it will be also dictated by like the payment system. But a lot of places will have some sort of exoskeleton, which a lot of the patients with spinal cord injuries can potentially try and see if that's going to work for them during their rehabilitation stay. But the exoskeleton devices are used more for like more chronic patients, depending on the hospital setup. But then also you would obviously first start with the body weight support and kind of slowly build up to that point of using the exoskeleton. So again, really interesting just to kind of see the contrast between different thought processes and places. One thing that I did want to touch base about was, in this study, we were looking at the late assessment for spinal cord injury. Here we usually say, you know, wait at least 72 hours after your injury or after surgery to do the INSCI examination. I wanted to touch base with both of you guys to see, you know, was there a reason for delaying performing the INSCI exam in Argentina? And is that typical in other parts of South America also?
We believe this happened because they are separate institutions. In Argentina, the healthcare is decentralized. For example, the patient immediately after the spinal cord injury is referred to acute hospital for surgery. And this institution requests to a specialized rehabilitation center. Therefore, acute hospital don't have health personnel training for classification with INSCI standards because this place don't rehabilitation. They aren't interested in this evaluation, perhaps because they believe that isn't their field or competence or work.
And has there been any professional efforts in Argentina to address this?
En español. Como decía en la respuesta anterior, los centros de agudos donde se realizan la cirugía de estabilización para los pacientes con lesión medular no están interesados en aprender esta evaluación, ya que ellos no lo pueden utilizar después para realizar algún uso clínico de esta valoración. Por lo tanto, pierden el interés por aprenderla y realizarla en un periodo agudo. Porque, como decía, el sistema de salud en Argentina está descentralizada, donde la cirugía se hace en una institución y la rehabilitación se hace en otra institución que no tiene conexión entre ellas. ¿Se podrá explicar esto?
Totalmente. The main problem is like the acute entities, the acute hospital that receive inpatients, usually they are not interested on following the standards of care or the INSCI, because they are like separate from the chronic stages and the outpatient, and they have no connection within each other, so they don't see the clinical value of evaluating when it's not the follow-up. And it basically is because of that there is a like not connection between the acute chronic outpatient phases and follow like on for life. And that is one of the big problems, right, Marce? Is that the big one? It's a problem, right? For
yes.
when you get your patients, you have no clue what is happening before, right?
Esto fue el motor para que dio origen al objetivo de este estudio. No saber si estos pacientes en el periodo agudo tenían un grado de impairment scale distinto al que nosotros la recibimos.
That is exactly the goal of this paper. The goal was to assess acute phases and see if it's different than when they received the patients and see how that changed. And also, in a way, it's trying to demonstrate how important it is to have those measurements early on in order for catch any recovery of function. So this is basically the reason and the passion that Marcelo, that Mr. Gatti brought to the table and say, okay, we need to collect as much data as we can to show the importance of early assessment. And hopefully this paper will add a lot to, not only in the English, hopefully we can translate this paper so it's accessible to everybody in Argentina. So it's like showing how important it is and how just maybe one assessment can change the trajectory of recovery.
Well, you characterized a problem and then responded to it. This is seems like a perfect way to end this conversation, and just have to say I hope every Argentinian spinal cord injured person gets to receive Mr. Gatti's care, because it seems stellar, and congratulate you all for linking the Americas through this project.
Perfect. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you for listening to this episode of SCI Science Perspectives, a podcast brought to you by the American Spinal Injury Association. The paper discussed in this episode was chosen based on the recommendation of Asia's Americas Committee. The podcast was founded thanks to the leadership of Dr. Suzanne Groh and is now made possible by your producer host, Dave McMillan, Freya Kalik, Marla Petrello, our production assistant and editor, Abby Fox, and Asia's front office. If you have any questions, comments, or concerns, please contact us at sciperspectivespodcast@gmail.com.